The following is brought to you by the Starfleet Podcast Network, SPN, The Spin.
But of course, it's a Star Trek fan film, right? It's not really them, but this helps tell the story, and it helps bring the set alive. And I think people hopefully will give me, allowance that it's not photo real. It's like, yeah, I'm a Star Trek fan film with a budget of Jesus Christ, not enough. You know what I mean?
A red alert. This is Big J with Beyond Trek Podcast. I'm sitting with Samuel Cockings, and we're going to talk about his exciting new film, Living the Dream, which thank you for getting me an advanced preview of that to watch the film. Just saw that. And I've got to tell you, just like always, your work on these fan films is amazing. I can't imagine the amount of time that this took to,
yes, to film. Don't. To.
Your special effects worked. It just, now you told me that this was something, and you don't have to, give away any spoilers, or you can if you'd like, it's up to you. But you told me that this was something very different than what you had done before. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more for me?
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. And this is such a exclusive thing. It hasn't even come out yet, technically, when filming this. This is like days before, so the world doesn't know it yet, and you're one of the few people that's seen the mostly finished edit. Yeah, this was a funny old one. I've said many other times that we have a habit on Trek Shorts of, budget is involved in getting actors onto set, onto this big green sheet we have, and so if we know we need them for half a day on one film, I'll have to write something new that can be shot in the time allotted left, because while I'm sure lots of people love to hang out on set, we all love to create on set, because all of us love our characters, love building with them. So if I invent a 3-hour filming edition, be like, great, let's explore something new. So I threw this to Nim as a, hey, let's do this as well. And she's like, okay, I trust you, whatever. Not having seen the concept of the film before. And we filmed it, and it was a different experience. And simply, this episode takes place during another episode of Star Trek. So it happened before and during the episode Defiant from DS9, which means it's got to tie in directly, and that's a very unique challenge. Hopefully, what do you think? How do you think I did?
I thought that you did very well. I really do. I liked how, and I think tie-ins are a good idea. That's a pretty new idea to have a film that takes place during something that was in Star Trek that's kind of parallel to that. I thought that was a great idea to do. And what made you pick this episode of Deep Space Nine?
Riker. Double dip.
Okay.
Double dip on the visual language. But also, every single story I do in Trek Shorts is important as a touchstone to their character's journey. They always add something that in 5 years' time, it's like, that's where that started, or that's where they felt this. Because, if you're going to invent something new, have it really add something. So this story in particular is we've seen Keely now as a captain, an ensign slightly older, and lieutenant twice, I believe. And she's different each time because she's differently aged. This is 2 months after One Small Step. That's why she's still that quirkiness that she was then. And not everyone loved that quirky side. But we've brought it back because there's the journey, right? And you're meant to see them back to back. And if you watch them back to back, they're quite consistent. This is her happy. Mm-hmm. She's alluded to in other stories. It's not a happy time for her. So getting a chance to tell a story right before everything hit the fan and see that pureness of her personality before the fall, I think will make the fall far more real to the audience member knowing Keely before. Because it's fine to say, that Cardassian war that we totally fought 10 years ago in TNG, and it's like, this thing you invented last week. Yeah, that thing. Have emotional impact with it. Nah. But if you'd seen it, you'd feel something for it, etc. So that's what I'm trying to do here. And Defiant, specifically, because the idea of Riker is the idea of the Enterprise. And I can spoil the Defiant episode, because, of course, you know the plot. And that's the fun of this episode. You know where it's going once you realize when we are. Because it's not explicit until you see it, right? But and I don't know if you even got it right from the start. When you caught that. But the fact that she meets Riker, likes Riker, Thomas Riker, and then gets betrayed by him shows her that heroes can let you down and good things cannot be, like, there's a sense of, I was so happy, wow, really bad stuff happened, because of course the episode is terribly graphic in terms of Cardassian deaths for Star Trek. So yeah, it's like a roller coaster of happy, and then it's like, oh no, bad stuff can really happen. So I wanted a touchstone to that, where you know how she will feel, but you don't necessarily see that, just, oh no, you know? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And that was a good pick to do that, because you're taking something that is familiar to Star Trek fans, which is using Thomas Riker. And that was a good episode, honestly, because I think we were all surprised by the reveal of that one. Yeah. I love how taking off sideburns from your face makes it like a Velcro kind of sound. I mean, really, like, wow, that sounds like that hurt to remove, but I guess it didn't.
Yeah, I'd love to see behind the scenes that when he actually shaved, when, because it's pretty seamless. I did a really good job, but it was the gimmick, right? So,
right, yeah, right, exactly. Well, it looked like it was a lot of fun to do, to write, to direct, to film. What is your favorite part of doing this film? Were you chomping at the bit to get to the special effects, or was it the script part? Just tell me what was the thing that you enjoyed most about making this film.
I'd say this is more of a struggle one than an enjoyment one. Does that come across in the final piece?
No.
Why do you think I'm saying that then?
Watching it, I get the impression that it was something that you like doing, that you enjoy doing. I can see that there were certainly challenges that you probably had just in doing the visual effects work, which all the DS9 related content, the station, the sets. And I know you had told me that these are all new things that you were working on. And so we had a previous interview where you said that first time you make those new assets is always the most complicated. Mm-hmm. But then when you have it for future episodes, yeah, is when it makes life a little easier. So it sounds like that was the complication here.
Kind of. Yeah, every DS9 set was original for this piece. They were all in various stages of finishing from a modeling perspective for another big project. And this was a nice excuse, quote unquote, to force them to be finished earlier. So that then when we get to that final stage for the other film, they can just be worked on, etc. But this was a tricky one because it is a story, but it's not a story structurally, right? It's a story that takes place inside another story, which is in itself a cliffhanger, which is that unsatisfying as a fan for all its member. Yes, no, maybe. It's going to be different for different people, right? I was trying something, you know. Is it a complete story? Well, if you watch the DS9, it is. That's a weird thing to ask, but of course, if you know the story, then you're like, wow, all this stuff happens. It's also difficult because it's bitty. It's tiny segments, which in themselves create a unique flow that doesn't always work. This is very contrasting to the recent film with Nick Cook and my dad, where it's like only two scenes, but they're very long, so they get to flow and build. This is a lot of very short scenes, so you think you see a lot, but there's not a lot of depth in them. But of course, each scene has a specific moment for Keeley. So it was a more difficult edit because it's less straightforward. And I don't know if it worked fully, right? It's going to be up to the audience to determine, because you see a lot of DS9, but do you see a lot of DS9? Do you know what I mean? It was a different sort of challenge. But of course, you know, you've got 3 hours to film it. You can't have Avery on set. And you know what I mean? These limitations exist that are really big, but I'm trying to push against what I can and can't do. Did it work? I don't know. You tell me.
Right. And hopefully the audience shares the same sentiment that I do, that it was another good episode. I get what you're saying is that there wasn't that depth of story, but the thing is that I think that watching it in the context that this is a story that's wrapped inside of another one, that will be excused, for lack of a better word, or understood. It will be understood that that is the purpose of this episode. And so honestly, I think people are going to be so amazed with your effects work that they're going to.
I've seen it, you know, a dozen times, right?
Well, so, but yeah, you're in it seeing it.
In the same way. But if you've not, and you certainly have never done DS9 before, this is a very strong out the gate DS9 piece. I did not go shy on sets. I kind of went a bit almost too far, you could say. But that level of breadth that no fan film has ever done for DS9 ever will hopefully draw people in the way it's like, wow, I'm living on the station and I can just sense this or feel this day in the life piece because I'm here, I'm there, you know, and everywhere. And one thing I think I like about this piece is that there's a lot of, if you're a big DS9 fan, this does need that. But, you know, why are you watching a Star Trek fan film about DS9 in the thumbnail and not be a big DS9 fan, right? We can excuse that's going to be a high percentage, you know. If you're a big DS9 fan, then I like the added layer of reverse foreshadowing, where you know all the bad things, this list of terrible things, and all of her naivety and hope. I like to think that it pangs you in the heart. I'd be like, oh, Keely, oh no. And so you're thinking way ahead of the story that you're like, oh, I feel so sorry for this woman. Like that layer hopefully permeates the entire piece. So even if the story itself is not deep, you understand the massive ramifications. You know, she's like, oh, the Dominion, there'll be no big threat. Like, oh God.
Yeah.
Hopefully that adds something real.
Yeah. Right. Oh, you'll find out. And the other plus here is that this will open up, I'm sure, more use of DS9 related content for fan films, because I'm willing to bet anyone out there who has been sitting on wanting to do something DS9 related is going to see that, okay, great, this stuff is now there. These assets are out there and can be done. So it's time to start, hopefully, keep my fingers crossed for you that now this inspires more DS9 related content, because that stuff is there now and you've also shown it.
I work with many people, so my doors are open to working with, etc. Yeah, you know, I've encouraged many people in many communities, say, just write a TNG fan film, X creator. I've got all the sets. Write it. You know what I mean? I'm waiting, you know. It's fun to make TNG and yeah, DS9 for sure. It's an interesting one, this piece. And we, you know, another thing we did for the first time, I'm sure you caught, but you can let me know what you thought. First use of CG digi doubles. Did you notice it? And what do you think?
I did notice it. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. Yes, I did know that they were digital doubles, but the thing is that with what you're doing and with what we have to work with, even having that in a Star Trek fan film is extraordinary. I wouldn't think that anyone is expecting you to have a deep fake digital double that is Star Wars type, like the person looks like they're there, but they're not. I'm sure
it wouldn't go that far, of course.
Right.
They are meant for further distances. The reason we built the Keely one specifically, and we've got others that we worked out how to do, was to include them in shuttle cockpits.
Yeah.
So that when you're flying by, I have several CG models, but let's be honest, Nim looks like Nim. You can't be putting some random Mortal Kombat fighter who happens to be Asian and put a black wig on her, like CG wig. Like it's a person. But the Keely model looked very, very good. And so there is definitely a line where it's like, oh, that's Keely. And I think I've often wanted to see people in shuttle interiors. And while that might be like 3 or 4 days more hard work to include those things, it'd be really fun. And recording actual physical plates for a shuttle limits you so radically, because the plate is flat. So if the shuttle moves this way, gone.
Yeah.
As soon as you start moving, did you double? They can't blink. They can't move their eyes. But it's them, and you can sort of do these really interesting moves. So that was really exciting. And as soon as I realized I could do that, I went a bit extreme with, well, let's have them walk away from camera. That'll make. But of course, it's a Star Trek fan film, right? It's not really them, but this helps tell the story, and it helps bring the set alive. And I think people hopefully will give me, you know, allowance that it's not photoreal. It's like, yeah, I'm a Star Trek fan film with a budget of Jesus Christ, not enough. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Yeah, really. Give this guy a break.
Yeah. Like, you got Riker. I know it's not actually Riker, but you got a Riker lookalike. Isn't that cool enough?
Yes, that's great. How many films do you see out there that Star Trek fan films that use digital characters, full digital characters, moving digital doubles? I have not seen many.
It's a dangerous slope of looking not real very easily. Mm-hmm. And I just embraced that for the last shot with Riker because I had a cut without that and on Keeley, and it felt underwhelming. It felt fine. I thought, you know what? Even if it won't work 100%, because he can't blink, he can't really move. I thought, to move the story, the perspective narrative from Keeley into the real story, how that last shot, I thought that, despite the flaws of it, narratively, gave that punch the film needed. What do you think when you saw that final shot on the Defiant with the lack of Beard Riker?
It was good. It was a good final shot. Yes. I thought you did a top-notch job on that, honestly.
Just ignore he's not blinking.
It's a good tie-in. Oh, that's all right.
Well, exactly. Except the fun of the shot. And it was definitely fun to recreate those DS9 shots. That I really worked, those three particular shots. Turns out they knew what they were doing with lighting. The ship looks really good from those angles. Yeah. To match them, it looked really good. So that was definitely fun, but in anamorphic and full HD, so it's the same shot, but that's what a DS9 remaster would look like, ostensibly, in a movie format. And it looks great.
Yeah.
Very proud of those.
Yeah, it was good. Well done. Sam, thank you for taking some time to sit with me and talk about the film. It's great. Really like it. And
it's different.
Yes.
Another
yes.
different format.
That's okay.
Nothing happens, but everything happens.
That's okay. You know, it's something different, and I'm sure that people will thoroughly enjoy it.
Hopefully.
All right, so go check it out. Samuel Cocking's new film, Living the Dream. That's on your YouTube channel is 543 Productions.
Yeah, Power 543 Fan Films is a good way.
Power 543 Fan Films. All right. Thank you, Sam, as always.
Thank you.
Live long and prosper. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/beyondtrek.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.